Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Hour number two of Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Talk baseball in hour number one. Talk a little bit about some football stories. We'll get to some NBA, maybe even a little bit more baseball later since 'tis the time of year. So, Kev, obviously from a football standpoint, we're kind of hitting a little bit of a lull right now, right? The draft stuff is cooling down. We had some rookie mini camps, and you can only take so much out of that. We're going to be heading into kind of the official offseason for football in a few weeks, and it's the every general manager's least favorite time of year because the football players don't have to be report for about 3 to 4 weeks, and it's usually when you see an uptick of guys getting into trouble and doing stupid stuff because, you know, they're young and they're young, they got nothing to do, so they find a way to get into trouble. It's usually the time of year that it happens. So speaking of getting into trouble, and this is a guy that I love. I've loaded up on him in fantasy leagues over the years. I think he's perpetually underrated. And unfortunately, Mark Ingram is getting hit with a 4-game PED suspension. And I have him in a dynasty league. I'm sure many of you have him in keeper leagues. And unfortunately, you're not going to have him until October of this year. It doesn't matter whether you said they already appealed it. It doesn't matter whether he says he didn't do it or it was an accidental. He's not going to be on the field for a month. And it's going to push Kamara's expectations up because he's going to be the lone carrier of the ball. And I think you have to increase his production and his projections. But what I want to wonder is, Mark Ingram and Sean Payton have always had a weird relationship. People have thought Ingram to be always in the doghouse. Payton has made some strange decisions regarding Ingram over the years. I could argue that he's done it to keep him healthier and to keep him on the field longer because Ingram struggled with some injuries during his career. But now what I'm curious about is if you think that Ingram stays in the doghouse for the entirety of the 2018 season.
I think it could end up being an incredibly risky situation when it comes to drafting Ingram, depending on the ADP. Because here's the thing with him and Kamara. What they did last year is really rare. I don't know if it's ever happened. Like, I'm almost positive, right, that both of them finished as RB1s. Like, to see a pair of RB1s in the same backfield is not typically how this thing goes. So you had to think, right, like, whether both of them take a step back, whether only one of them takes a step back, like, something like that had to be coming. So for Ingram now, he is in a spot here where he's also the guy who I would say people are significantly less excited about, right? Like, everybody was drafting Kamara before Ingram heading into the year, and as soon as Ingram goes down, people are, oh, I'll take Kamara one overall. I saw a report yesterday, and I don't remember where it came from, but somebody was talking about that Alvin Kamara is the next LaDainian Tomlinson. Like, everybody's all in on Kamara, and we can get to evaluating Kamara, but as far as Ingram goes, I think it's incredibly risky to even be trusting what you're going to get from this guy, because you said it perfectly there. Him and Peyton have not had the smoothest of relationships, and I'm not entirely positive that they need him. Now, of course, they're going to love to replicate what they got last year because of how well it worked for them, but it's not even like they don't necessarily need to rely on the running game because they still have Drew Brees. So for this team, if they wanted to commit all in to Kamara as a three-down back, and they went with, you know, some more Drew Brees passing. It's totally in play here. So I have no idea how anybody could feel 100% confident in anticipating what you're going to get out of Mark Ingram, even if he were going to not be suspended for the first four games. Now, when you factor this whole thing in, it's a situation I personally, as of now, I can't imagine myself touching.
Right now on Fantasy Pros, you go to fantasypros.com and you can see the aggregate rankings from all the experts. Right now, only 30 experts are in. That'll get up to triple that about, excuse me, as we get closer to the season. But in PPR leagues, Alvin Kamara currently a fifth-ranked running back behind Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, David Johnson, and Zeke Elliott. That's for the 2018 season. So Alvin Kamara is fifth, right above Kareem Hunt and Melvin Gordon. Mark Ingram has dropped all the way down to the 18th back behind Kenyon Drake and Joe Mixon, right in front of Alex Collins and Derrick Henry. So clearly this has widened the gap between the two. I don't know exactly what it was beforehand, but I'm pretty sure Ingram is at least five spots higher than that. I think people have been a little aggressive about ranking Kamara well in front of Ingram, but now given this, I think it's all fair game. I don't know what it's going to look like, and I don't know if he's going to want to keep Ingram in the doghouse for the remainder of the year. I think he has to be mindful of the fact that this is a team that can compete for a championship, and you are going to need them both. You don't want to use Alvin Kamara the way the Steelers use Le'Veon Bell, different kind of player, A, and B. I don't think it was particularly wise of the Steelers to do that. One could argue that the Steelers haven't really cared because they don't know if he's going to be around long term. So they gave him the ball 400 times last year. That isn't something you want to do with Kamara. I think they have the ideal scenario with two extremely talented backs. Kamara, very explosive and a great pass catcher. Ingram can do a little bit of everything too. So I think people have been in aggressive with the Kamara rankings, but now I think it's on, and I just don't know what it's going to look like. Ideally, they'd come in and start splitting the carries again, and they can both be valuable, but now, man, I mean, it crushes me. To give you a sense, for me, he is my I'm in a dynasty league, and we'll talk about, we'll transition to this now, because I'm in a dynasty league with, it's an industry league, the SiriusXM IDP dynasty league. So we start 20 players each week, 11 defensive players, 9 offensive players. It is a 16-team league. It's actually a 32-team league, but there's two 16-team conferences. The rosters are 40 deep with a 5-man rookie-only taxi squad. So it takes a lot to manage this team year over year. And those types of players are at a significant premium. And Mark Ingram is my starting running back in that league, and he's really all I had. So I'm toast for September, and something like that is probably going to keep me out of the playoffs. Now, I picked 8th this year. It was the first year I didn't really do that well in that league. I missed the playoffs for the first time. I think that was the 6th year. I've won the whole league twice, so I've had really good success in this league. But I'm now at a point where my only running backs on the roster were Mike Gillisley. And that wasn't going to get it done because of Ingram's suspension. So I drafted Ronald Jones. I had the 8th overall pick. And it was super running back heavy this year because this is a good running back class. And I think people felt the need to bolster their running back, especially if you didn't finish all that well. Mike Florio of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, whom I referenced earlier, was the number one overall pick. He took over the team from Corey Parson, fantasy executive, who you can hear every day, Monday to Friday, on Carton and Friends. But Saquon Barkley went one. This is a PPR, full-point PPR league. Saquon Barkley went one. Darius Geis, two. Royce Freeman, three. Rashad Penny, four. Sony Michel, five. Kerryon Johnson, six. That's who I thought I was going to get at 8. But he went a little earlier. Nick Chubb at 7 and Ronald Jones at 8. So once Johnson got picked, I was like, all right, it's Chubb or Jones, who's ever left to me. And number 7 went with Chubb, and I get Ronald Jones. So the upshot of Jones is that he's going to have an opportunity to start this year in Tampa. And I do think he'll be the starting running back at some point this year. I just don't know if their offensive line is all going to be all that good, and I don't know how successful it'll be as a rookie. It's a nice complimentary piece for me, and it could be a decent long-term piece for this dynasty league, but I could struggle with this running back tandem this year, and Ingram and Jones.
The Ingram thing's tough. I like the Ronald Jones get. He's a home run hitter. I think that's how a lot of people described him coming out of USC, and Tampa needs that. And the thing is, their offensive line is not terrific, as you mentioned, but they're not, at least if Ronald Jones is good, right? Like, they won't be one-dimensional. So I think that that is important, where they're obviously probably going to still be a pass-first team, I would say, right, with Jameis there. And I don't think they've given up on Jameis, I think, despite the fact that a ton of people probably want them to give up on Jameis. So I actually think that you could end up getting a lot of value. And I think specifically, like as you mentioned, that you were going to go probably Chubb or Jones, whichever one got to you, considering the Ingram situation, right? Like, you probably need more of a ready-to-go guy now. Jones is certainly, or at least should be, drafted much higher than Nick Chubb in terms of single-season fantasy football. So for you, since you're going to need him right away, I think Jones is... I probably would rather have Jones over Kerryon Johnson. I'm totally out on Rashad Penny. I mean, if the touches are there, sure, but I'm totally out on Rashad Penny as well. I think the Jones-Royce Freeman debate is one of the more interesting ones. I think that Saquon's clear one, and I'd probably say Geis is clear two. But then I'd be interested in Sony, Ronald Jones, and Royce Freeman.
Yeah, Royce Freeman went, I think, third. That we have two conferences. I'm looking at Royce Freeman went third in my conference. And in the other conference, he went third. It was Saquon, Geis, Royce Freeman. Let me see if it – yeah, Rashad Penny went fourth in one. He went fifth in the other. Sony Michel and Rashad Penny, they switched on some of those. You know, Sony Michel, I think he's a great player. I just – it's the whole Patriots running back thing. Are they really going to hand it all over to a rookie? But people are probably thinking he can at least duplicate what Deion Lewis did, so why wouldn't I just take him there and have him be a valuable piece? So I understand that completely. So I'm trying to think. I can't remember. I think the Mark Ingram news came out like right before I picked. I was going to go with the running back anyway,
yeah,
but that cinched it. In case, because I was thinking of dealing back. I don't know. You know, I have some doubts about Ronald Jones and the Tampa rushing offense in general, but I just took him there because once Ingram got suspended, I was like, well, now I definitely need a running back, even if he's not great for the first month. I just need something there. I can't take a bunch of zeros. I mean, this is the type of league, to give you a sense, where you hang on to players even if there's no value for them right now. For example, I hung on to Jamaal Charles all of last year, just in case guys got hurt. Like right now, my running backs in that league are Ingram, Ronald Jones, Chris Carson, who's now, you know, showed flashes in Seattle last year and is now going to be Rashad Penny's backup, and Mike Gillisley and Andre Ellington and Jamaal Charles. Like, those are the types of players in deep leagues that you just have to hang on to. So, we'll see what happens. But to give you a little bit more of an update on what happened with that league, in the second round, I went with, is again, it's a IDP league, defensive tackle Deron Payne.
What happened to the quarterback?
So what happened to the quarterbacks?
Didn't you say you were going to take a quarterback? Didn't you say you needed one until you start looking forward?
I need a long-term option there, potentially, because my quarterbacks are Phil Rivers and Blake Bortles. So I could use somebody that I could probably throw on the taxi squad, but unfortunately...
Ooh, the big three went, or the big four.
Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Josh Rosen all went.
Mm.
So that means I was going to have to draft Josh Allen...
That's a no-no.
...or Mason Rudolph as one of my long-term quarterbacks, and I don't like either of them for the long term. So I was out on that. So what is important to note is that in IDP leagues, obviously you really want to go after those three down linebackers, and Tremaine Edmonds went one pick in front of me. But I also addressed it last year. I drafted Reuben Foster and Hassan Reddick last year. Now, Reuben Foster may or may not get suspended. It looks like charges are being dropped because the woman involved is not going to cooperate or not going to testify against him. So we'll see what happens there. Hassan Reddick, I don't know that that was a wise pick last year. I think he won't be much of a three down linebacker. But we'll see. I couldn't draft another linebacker there. I wasn't going to draft Leighton Vander Esch. So I drafted the defensive tackle because you get bonus points in this league if defensive tackles make a bunch of plays and make a bunch of sacks. When it was first created, we were trying to make sure that defensive tackles were relevant. In most IDP leagues, defensive tackles, particularly nose tackles, are irrelevant. They don't make enough tackles to warrant having them on the team. So for this league, it was created to ensure that those guys were important. And we actually did, the people that set it up, I probably put a little bit too much of an emphasis. So dominant defensive tackles are some of the highest scoring guys in this whole league.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that is a real shame that you got busted on those quarterbacks, though. I can't, because at first I was like, where the heck did Josh Rosen go? I was looking through because you sent me the photo. And, I mean, you just kind of ended up in a bad draft spot, I would really say.
If Rosen was there,
you got to pull the trigger.
I really would have considered it. I probably would have drafted him there. But I'm not in a bad situation at quarterback right now. I probably have Rivers for two more years, Bortles for a year. Bortles and Rivers have been like nearly identical from a fantasy production standpoint the last couple of years. Like, I've had to go back and forth depending on who they're playing, which can be frustrating at times, but at least they're two decent options. So there you go. We're all the way through we're halfway through the third round. Hopefully the guys that are drafting in this league aren't listening, but I know who I have lined up for this next pick. I'll tell you right now, it's the eighth pick of the third round. I'm a couple picks away. So I got Nyheim Hines from Colts.
Love that. Steal.
I'm going to have him as a backup.
Oh, he should be gone by now.
If I don't get him, it'll be Antonio Callaway from the Browns. Obviously, some off-the-field trouble with him, but he could be an interesting long-term asset. And then even Minka Fitzpatrick at safety. So those are the three guys. I know I'll get one of those in that Dynasty League. It's a fun league. Very complicated. It's not for everybody, but it's a lot of fun. And after you win it once or twice, you're like, I'm going to keep doing this thing, see if I get another ring. So come back. We'll talk about Kurt Warner. What's up with him? It's Mike and Kevin on FST. We'll be right back.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today, Mike and Kevin. Talking some NFL, and Kurt Warner story, Kevin reminded me of before the show. Figured we'd address it quickly. So last week, it was a controversy about Kurt Warner not getting the Monday night game because he thought it had been promised to him. Now, this week, there seems to be a controversy about him stating that he was going to come back. He's 46 years old. He is already in the Hall of Fame. And he apparently said he had a conversation about playing the NFL again. He was in the Cardinals broadcast booth on Monday during an appearance. And he said he talked to a coach about possibly doing it if they needed someone. I was actually ready to for this coming season. Here's his quote. I actually talked to a coach, and my wife said, go for it. I think it would be great. So I actually talked to a coach about possibly doing it if they needed someone. But then they went out and signed someone. I don't think they thought I was serious, so I think we're completely done now. He then kind of backtracked and said, I simply mentioned that I had thrown a text to a coaching friend saying I think I could give him one more year if he needed me. This was not. I'm dead set on making a comeback. Just friends having a conversation. The speculation is that it was the Chargers. He's close with Ken Whisenhunt, who's the offensive coordinator there. They signed Geno Smith, and they have Cardale Jones there. And he would be, at 46 years of age, he would be 6 years older than Tom Brady, by far the oldest quarterback. So kind of a goofy story, but I don't know why he keeps infusing himself in the news like this.
He just wants every job. Like, eventually he's going to be furious about the fact that he doesn't have Roger Goodell's job or something along those lines. Like, I don't wonder. This is the question I wanted to ask you. Let's say Kurt Warner was the primary backup for the Chargers. Is there a single backup you think that you would not take before
82 years of age?
Which that'd be impressive. Is there? You think there's a single backup that you would prefer to start if you had to start every backup? Is there anyone that you would take Kurt Warner over a specific backup? Now, I know you probably don't know all 32 backups. Neither do I at the moment. But off the top of your head, is there one that comes to mind where you think you'd feel more comfortable starting 46-year-old Kurt Warner?
No. No. There's some backups that I probably really dislike, but I don't think I dislike anybody that much. I think it's, him being goofy and not realizing he's on a hot mic and that everything he says is going to be heavily scrutinized. I doubt he was really serious, but in the back of every player's mind like that, they're competitive, so they're going to think, yeah, you know what?
Oh, 100%.
If I didn't do all the practices and you threw me out there on the field, I feel like I'm in pretty good shape. I think I'd get myself through a half. You know what I mean?
Charles Barkley thinks that he could dominate Al Horford right now.
Yeah, well, I hope he doesn't think that. Charles
he does.
A couple of LBs, couple of LBs over the years.
He 100% thinks that.
Like, would you rather have Kurt Warner than Matt Schaub? That's Matt Ryan's backup.
No, I'd rather take my chance with Schaub. I'd rather take my chance with Schaub. Right?
All right, let's play this game. Right, well, I'll give you a couple more. So this is a good game. It's good exercise. Good useless exercise on a Saturday morning. Garrett Gilbert is currently Cam Newton's backup quarterback. You want Garrett Gilbert or Kurt Warner?
I'll take my chances with Gilbert. I can't. I right? Like, Carolina has enough there to where he could throw a screen to McCaffrey. One.
Matt Barkley is Andy Dalton's backup right now.
Oh, dear. Now, give me Barkley. Let him see if he can throw
Hall
it off.
Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner.
I just know.
Matt
right?
Barkley
like,
was my quarterback
get...
on that Dynasty League team. I drafted him on that Dynasty League team a couple of years ago. Didn't work out. So let's keep going. Cowboys. Who's Dax?
Cooper Rush.
Oh, yeah, Cooper Rush.
He lit up the Cooper preseason.
Rush. And they drafted Mike White, too. So that's a done deal. Denver, we got who's backing up Case Keenum? Oh, Paxton Lynch, of course, and Chad Kelly.
I think I may have one.
That's a rough.
It might be cheating though, because he's definitely not second on the depth chart. He's probably fourth, but nevertheless, Christian Hackenberg.
Oh, you're saying of all the backups?
No. I'm only going for number twos on the depth chart, but I just would like to somewhat gauge. That Kurt Warner would still be ahead of Hackenberg.
You know, Hackenberg's never thrown has not really played in the NFL, so right. I guess you'd have to take a guy that's played versus a guy that's never played, but that would also eliminate Cooper Rush and some other guys. Man, I just had one before, and he threw me off. It was a good one, too. Oh, I'll get to it, I promise. It was one that I thought, like, you know what? I think I might rather have Warner. I'll get to it. It is, was it Miami? No. Who's in Jacksonville?
No one good.
Cody Kessler is currently, and Tanner Lee, they just drafted Tanner Lee, are backing up Blake Bortles. That's really not a long-term plan. I'd just like to note that. Jacoby Brissett is behind Luck.
Just so you
I got
guys
one.
Know.
This is the one. So Deshaun Watson's backup in Houston is Brandon Whedon and Joe Webb. And Brandon Whedon is like 35.
Brandon
right?
Whedon is as old as Kurt Warner, so this is a fair point to make.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how I'm trying to find his age. I don't have his age in front of me, but I would imagine Brandon Whedon is 34 or 35, right?
Like, I think Brandon Whedon is probably better than Kurt Warner, but then I'd probably go situation and take what the Chargers offer me and start Kurt Warner.
Brandon Whedon is, here's his bio, 34. Yeah, he's 34. He'll be 35 in October. So basically, this is your age 35 season. So that's a possibility. Look, I'm all for protecting fellow gingers like myself, but Brandon Whedon, it's a hard guy to defend. It's just a tough guy to get behind. So so there you go. That's it. That's our Kurt Warner ranking for the week. Maybe we should update it throughout the course of the season. Maybe after we get through OTAs, we'll see where he falls in the pecking order of backups.
I think that's a great idea.
Let's see. So Steve Wilks, the Cardinals head coach, said Sam Bradford is our starter. He came out and said it. Mm-hmm. It has been speculation from a lot of fantasy people, certainly myself included, that Rosen is the most likely to start week one. Doesn't mean he will. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the other guys won't as well, but the most likely. I think you have to give Darnold a shot. They've put Baker on ice. Allen has got to be on ice. And Lamar Jackson obviously won't be starting week one unless there's an injury. So it's really a Rosen-Darnold race to see who starts first, injuries aside, obviously. And I would just put my money on Rosen because I think McCown played well last year. He showed that he was capable. And it's a lot for Darnold to have to ingest, right? The New York City media thing is always going to play a role. All these quarterbacks will be heavily scrutinized nationally and locally, but there's a little bit of an added juice when it comes to the Jets and Darnold because it is the first franchise quarterback they've had since Joe Namath. Ken O'Brien was supposed to be, he was a starter for a while, but never really took that moniker of true franchise quarterback. So he comes out and says Sam Bradford is our starter, but he has to say something like that, right? They're paying Sam Bradford a bunch of money, and they haven't really seen Josh Rosen yet. So your thoughts, though, likelihood that Rosen is starting week one, how do you feel about it? Put a percentage on it.
So here's the thing. I actually think that the most talented quarterback in front of any of these rookies is Sam Bradford. So if we're doing injuries aside, then I don't think Rosen would be able to actually beat Bradford out for the job. And I still think that Rosen's the best quarterback of this bunch. It's really a matter of, is Sam Bradford healthy? Because that's, to me, what it comes down to. Like, I think that Darnold can certainly beat Josh McCown out for a couple of reasons. One, I do think that he is talented. Two, I think McCown is incredibly willing to let Darnold take that job from him. Like, I don't think McCown has any worries about holding on to the starting position. That doesn't mean he's not going to compete, but I don't think that he's all too concerned with how that thing's going to be playing out. And three, the Jets can't stop saying how much they're in love with Sam Darnold every day. Like, Todd Bowles looks like a giddy kid who just got the best gift ever on Christmas. I believe it was it the owner or the GM who said that he was going to save this franchise or something to that degree. Like, they are so gung-ho over.
That is not helpful, by the way.
No, it's not. It's not a great idea.
To do that.
I don't think Darnold should start week one. Like, Darnold is one of those guys. Like, there was people, and it was a little silly, but people thought that he should go back to college. One, because of the age, but also just because of his readiness to head into the NFL. And the big knock on Darnold is he's a turnover guy. So I think, honestly, he's one of the guys I think that you should probably also sit for a full year. I would probably say, though, that I think that Rosen's the most talented, and because of the injury history of Sam Bradford, I'd say absolutely Rosen has a chance. It's just that I don't see it unless Bradford gets hurt. And he played, it was weird, he played all 16 for Minnesota when they couldn't keep any of their offensive linemen healthy. And then he just couldn't walk. I mean, pretty much it came like two games, I think it was, into the next year.
They tried to put him out there last year during a game where he couldn't get back and forth from the sideline to the huddle.
It was the Bears on Monday Night Football, I think.
Yeah, it was an absurd attempt. I thought to myself, why did they try to do this? He is obviously hurt, and it isn't helping anybody here. So, yeah, look, Sam Bradford's career is marred by injuries, and it is what it is. I think this team is going to struggle some. I think their over-under is down to, like, 6.5, I think, right now. I usually do. We'll do these over the summer as we approach the season, but we'll keep taking a look at over-unders. We'll do it in August, right before the season. I don't want to, you know, obviously injuries play a role in everything there. But that being said, I've been on the Cardinals over the last couple of years. I missed it last year by a half game.
Mm.
I've thought that their roster was pretty talented, but it's taken a turn now. And I just wonder what this is going to look like if Bradford gets hurt and you have a rookie QB in there. I have some faith in Rosen, but it doesn't mean that he's going to light up the league as a rookie. Speaking of guys that lit up the league as a rookie, the Colts have no question that Andrew Luck will be ready for camp. They obviously have been extremely deliberate about this. And I almost feel dumb asking the question, but do you believe this? Because there hasn't been really any reason to believe anything that they say about it anymore.
It's so difficult. I mean, you're just talking about the over-unders there, right? And I kind of after the draft, like, I was trying to just take a look and gauge where all of these divisions are at. And predicting the AFC South is going to be really difficult. And I was talking to my brother about it, and I made the point. I'm like, you know, the thing is, when Luck was healthy, I mean, he ran through the South no problem. And he said, yeah, but the South used to be all garbage teams, and that's just not the case anymore. So it's a really, really tough thing. I mean, honestly, you really probably can't trust that Andrew Luck's playing until you see him throw a football. And until that happens, I wouldn't even bank on anything. But if you see him play in the preseason, which is like weird because you probably don't want to risk it, but like let him go out there for like a series during one preseason game, and then just so we know he's alive, and then go from there. But I think the overall point that I wanted to make is just that AFC South, and I don't know how you feel about it. I don't know how much you've even really looked into it at this point. I mean, I know it's May, but I think it's going to be really tough to figure out who's going to win that. Are you thinking, have I stumped you? Or is Mike gone? Mike might be gone. So I'll say this then, kind of just how I've been viewing this, right? Because Luck is back, and I think there's certainly a case to be made, right, that Andrew Luck is not just the best quarterback in that AFC South, right, but that Andrew Luck is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL when healthy. Like, I know the turnovers are a problem, but I think we can all admit, right, the talent that Andrew Luck is. And they've made some improvements. Now, the roster around him, I don't think you could make a case that it's any worse than the last time we saw Andrew Luck, right? Like, they had roster problems even when he was dominant. So the worry is Luck's health plus how much better is the rest of this South. I mean, heck, the Jaguars probably should have been in the Super Bowl last year, and their defense hasn't taken a hit in any way. Offensively, they're a little less dangerous, right? They lost some receivers, and Bortles is still the quarterback, but how drastically could one of the least dangerous offenses be when Bortles is still the quarterback? Like, I don't know how much worse it could get. The Titans have improved, and the Texans last year when Watson was healthy looked to be one of the better teams in the league. So it could be a really, really interesting race within that AFC South.
Just to go back for a second, I think I missed a question that you had earlier about Kamara. I think you wanted to ask me a question about him. I know I took it in a different direction, but I wanted to sort of put a bow on that. What was the question you had for me about Kamara?
Well, I'm just curious if you're expecting Kamara to be better than he was last year. I believe it's Pro Football Focus ranks the most impactful seasons that skill players have. And I think they said that Kamara's, and I think, I don't know how far it goes back, but I think it's like 2013, that he pretty much had the best season a running back has ever had. And I don't know if Alvin Kamara is going to necessarily be better. Now, he only had 120 carries last year, and Ingram had 230, right? So maybe that number gets up to 200. But he's not going to average 6 yards a carry on 200 attempts. I promise you that. He had 81 catches last year on 100 targets, 826 yards. He averaged 10 yards per catch, and he had the 13 total touchdowns. Like, maybe it's two more touchdowns. Like, maybe he gets it up to 15 total. But, I mean, that is a lot, and I think the yards, again, I don't think this is a 250-carry kind of guy, and the receiving to me is going to look the same. I don't mean to be hot-takey, but I don't think I'm going to touch Kamara because I think that people are actually going to be overrating him a little bit.
He's first-round pick, so that's the price you're going to have to pay. And I don't disagree that other people are going to have him ranked above where I do, but I don't have concerns about him being productive.
It's not about being productive. It's about the value, though, right? Because, I mean, people are talking about Kamara as MVP, and I just don't know if I can see that at all.
Yeah, that's always the discussion, is the value of the player, whether it's the first round or the third round or whatever it might be. I understand where you're coming from. I do think that this first four games you could see some monster games, right? Because they may lean on him quite a bit until Ingram comes back, and then spell him a little bit then, you know, fresher to start the season and all that kind of stuff. And then get him a little bit, then manage his carries a little bit more during the middle part of the season. So I understand what you're saying, but I would expect pretty big numbers from him. The value is always the question, so I'd understand if you didn't want to take him the first round and let somebody else do it. So come back, talk a little bit more football after the break. It's Mike and Kevin, Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on FST, Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. And give us a call at 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY. If you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, go to dailyroto.com/DKMS and take a crack at playing free daily fantasy baseball. You can play every day. It's totally free, and the contests are sponsored by TKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. Every 3 minutes, an American is diagnosed with blood cancer, and only 30% of all blood donor patients are able to find a compatible bone marrow donor in their family. So go to dailyroto.com/DKMass. Find out how you can help eradicate blood cancer and play free daily fantasy baseball with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. So fun way, great cause, fun way to support a great cause. So please do that. dailyroto.com/DKMass. So where were we? We were talking Alvin Kamara, we're talking Andrew Luck. Thing cut off on me, so I didn't hear your rant. Were you going off about the AFC South there for a minute?
Yeah, I was, because I think the AFC South is going to be really difficult when we crack into this thing, kind of figure out who's going to come out of it. Maybe people won't think it is. But my overall point was just right. Like, when Luck was healthy, he dominated it. But now the AFC South is way better. Titans won a playoff game. The Jaguars probably should have made the Super Bowl. And Deshaun Watson, when healthy, was a bona fide star. To where, if we've got a healthy Luck, healthy Watson, and the Jaguars and the Titans are everything, you know, there's no catastrophic injury that happens from now until we get to the season, I think that you could be looking at four, at the minimum, solid teams.
I think the Colts are going to have the hardest time obtaining that lofty status that you gave them of solid teams.
Well, here's
the
thing.
I think Houston and Tennessee and Jacksonville all compete for playoff spots. Do I expect three to come out of the South? I mean, it's possible. So who is it in the East? The Pats are a lock.
That's it. The rest of them are all terrible, like every single year. They're all terrible.
So you have that situation there. Then you have
the Steelers.
The Steelers, and I don't think you could expect the Browns or the Bengals to make the playoffs. The Ravens, probably same as last year, sort of an 8-8, maybe competing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Ravens are going in the wrong direction personally. And then you have the West, so that's the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Raiders, Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders, Broncos.
Yeah.
You know, Broncos, I'm not hugely confident in. The Raiders, I didn't like them to make the playoffs last year. I ended up being right about that one. And then, that's a competitive division right there, the AFC West. Mm-hmm. But then the South, They used to call it the AFC soft, and those teams were really bad, but obviously a couple of them have turned it around, notably the Jaguars, and the Texans have been right in there in the mix. They obviously won a couple of divisional titles, and now the Titans made the playoffs and won a playoff game last year, a fluky playoff game, but they won it nonetheless before they got annihilated by the Patriots. So, yeah, I like, could a third team make it? Yeah, because like the Texans had injuries that were beyond their control last year. They lost their starting quarterback, and they lost J.J. Watt, and that's a little bit too much to come back from. But I would decidedly put the Colts as the worst team in that division. They're trying to build it up and protect. I thought they were going to move out of that number six pick. Well, they moved out of the number three pick,
mm-hmm.
so they got a bunch of assets. I thought they were potentially going to move out of the six pick, but I don't criticize them at all. They got Quentin Nelson, who some people feel is the best player in this whole draft, next to Saquon Barkley. In fact, Rich Giamanello, one of our college experts that you hear during the football season here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, he thinks Quentin Nelson is the most surefire player in this draft, a guy that will make multiple Pro Bowls and potentially looking at an elite career. So now they're in the last three seasons, they picked two offensive linemen in the first round. They've been trying to fix this to keep Luck cleaner than they were. But defensively, you know, their offensive weapons are Ryan Grant, who will battle it out with Chester Rogers opposite T.Y. Hilton. I've read some news recently that they really like Chester Rogers and that he will have an opportunity to start. If he can beat out Ryan Grant during preseason, offseason, and who knows, maybe if they're going three wide, both of those guys are on the field. Eric Ebron was signed to be a complement to Jack Doyle, and Andrew Luck can use a two tight end set there. But defensively, it isn't where you want to be. Now, they drafted 5 defensive players in the draft, including three of those in the second round, to go along with Nelson, their first-round pick. But if you look down and say Margus Hunt, Al Woods, Hassan Ridgeway, Jabal Sherrod, pretty good. John Sime, Jabal Sherrod's pretty good. The others, I don't think they've established themselves yet. John Simon, Antonio Morrison, Anthony Walker, that's your linebackers. Then Quincy Wilson, Matthias Farley, Malik Hooker, Kenny Moore. Malik Hooker, the first-round pick last year, is coming back off a major knee injury. That's not going to get it done. They're going to get crushed with teams scoring a lot of points on them again.
This is the thing, though, right? As long as Andrew Luck's healthy, I can't really see them finishing last because I think Andrew Luck is really good.
So who's worse than them in that division?
Well, the thing is, though, right, like things happen in the NFL that we don't necessarily expect. Like, I'm fine saying that they have the worst roster, but they might have the best quarterback. If he's healthy, he's the best quarterback. And that's yes. still matters. And the thing is, it's not as if...
Look, because 2 years ago, sure. That team was terrible. And they went 8-8 because of Luck.
Yeah.
So I understand your point, and I concede that, and I agree with it. But I don't think it's enough anymore because the quarterback play and the general offensive play in the rest of the division has gotten far better. With
right.
Jacksonville was taking the heat off the QB... With Tennessee and Houston, it was obtaining a legitimate QB. So, yeah, they have the worst roster. I'm just going to have to go with them last. It doesn't mean they go 3 wins again, but I do think they'd have a tough time making the playoffs or finishing above third in the division. Like you said, things can go wrong,
right.
But the Jaguars are going to be a favorite with the Tennessee probably in the number two slot along with Houston.
Well, this is the thing, though, because I think for when people start talking about this, right, so people will be like, Andrew Luck, Andrew Luck, and then people will retort by saying, I don't care about Andrew Luck, the rest of the roster is garbage. That's always been the case for Andrew Luck in his time in Indianapolis. So, and I don't know necessarily if this means that this iteration of this roster is any worse than the previous ones. And the thing I'll say in terms of those other teams, right? I've seen a lot of talk online about thinking that the Jaguars could be in for a slip because they basically last year pulled out all of these close games. And they're, it's possible, right? Like, their defense is their defense. Yeah. But I could see that there's a world where the Jaguars slip. I like the Titans. They're probably going to be my pick to come out of the South. I think that they've been continuing to get better. They had so much talent last year to where I didn't understand why they weren't as why they were so bad. So if they can kind of connect on some things, and if Vrabel comes in and does well, I think that they could. I think that they could really assert themselves as even as the second best team, perhaps in the AFC. No disrespect to the Steelers. And
the Jags went 10. The Jags went 10-6, so it wasn't like
right.
And so, if people expect some sort of regression because of the close games, that does make sense. But I also do think that they've continued to make their roster better during the offseason. So I could see them doing about the same. I understand because Miami was that team last year. Going into the 2017 season, they had made the playoffs in 2016, but had won a bunch of close games, and we saw the regression last year. 6-10, a team continues going the wrong direction. I don't think Adam Gase is going to be able to see this rebuilding program through. I think people are going to get frustrated with him, and they continue to turn that roster over. They won't be a playoff team this year. So,
and
Ryan Tannehill's the quarterback. So, and we all know that that's not a long term situation.
No, and then to put a bow on this, I'm not certainly positive that the Texans are going to be fine. Because we know for a fact that if Watson isn't the MVP level Watson that we saw for however many games that was, they don't have a chance.
Like four games.
Right. So, but that's, and they still lost. I know what they were 2-2 in those four games, right? They lost to the Seahawks and they lost to the Pats. Now, mind you, I mean, it's the Seahawks and the Pats, and both of those games were on the road, and they were competitive in both and arguably should have won both. They still lost
they beat
both.
They beat the Bengals, lost to the Pats.
And they, like, murdered the
Titans, lost to the
Titans,
Chiefs.
Right? Yeah. So it's just, the thing is,
57-14.
With Watson, like, this isn't the first major injury he had. He missed, like, a whole year, or at least significant time, I know, at Clemson, because he messed up, I think it was the other ACL.
Yeah, it's so, two torn ACLs so far.
I don't necessarily know. Like, even if we get Watson for full 16, I'm not positive that he's the same guy because, and again, he's not run first, but his athleticism certainly matters, especially behind an offensive line that is still going to be poor, I would say. They had one of the most interesting things that come out of this NFL draft, and I know his last name is Rankins, I think it's Martinius. He's an offensive tackle that's coming out of A&M. He was the 80th overall pick, I believe, in this draft.
Martinius Rankin.
Yeah. He may honestly have the most day one pressure out of every single pick that was made in this entire draft because he is expected to be the left tackle for this team who is people are expecting to compete for the postseason, and they 100% believe that they have their franchise quarterback. Like a lot of these,
it's interesting too because that's not the only team that's trying out a rookie at left tackle. The Pats drafted Isaiah Wynn. Out of Georgia, and he was thought to be a guard at this level, but not for the Patriots. They're going to make him into a left tackle. Like, guarantee it works out.
Oh, yeah.
They have a great offensive line coach, and they know the types of players that they need. I think that will work out. It is a lot of pressure to put on a rookie to be the left tackle, but, you know, that's why he's a first-round draft pick. So I think the Pats
But Rankins went in the third. Oh, you're talking about the Pats.
Yeah, I was talking about Wynn, but right. You're right on Rankin. Yeah, that is a lot of pressure to put on a rookie to become in and be the savior. You know, they obviously dealt Dwayne Brown last year. There was a lot of animosity between Dwayne Brown and the owner. Why is his name escaping me right now? The Houston Texans owner. Gosh, it's terrible that I'm forgetting it on air. But in any event,
Bob McNair.
Bob McNair. So they dealt Dwayne Brown to Seattle, and there was an obvious hole there. So they're going to need to get that fixed so that Lamar Miller can be better, so that Deshaun Watson can stay clean, and on and on and on. They have tremendous weapons, really. On the outside with Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins. Braxton Miller is there, and Bruce Ellington they brought in, and Sammy Coates they brought in as fourth and fifth receivers there. So tight end, they drafted Jordan Akins this year. Steven Anderson is still there. Ryan Griffin is still there. They had a host of injuries at that position last year. They actually drafted two tight ends in the draft this year. They lost all three of their tight ends in 1 week to concussions last year. Yeah. So You know, the weapons are there defensively. Obviously, if everybody comes back and the injured players like J.J. Watt can be go back to their old self, the Texans are going to be a handful for a lot of teams. But to your point, offensive line play is always something that can be overlooked. I don't overlook it because I write an article every year for our exclusive Edge package in football that details the offensive line changes and rankings and all that kind of stuff. The rankings aren't always the easiest thing to do, but I like doing it because it gives me some insight as to which teams may look good on the surface, but as you look a little closer, they're going to struggle. Last year was probably the best year I ever had for doing that article, simply because I kind of identified to a lot of people as often as I could that the Seahawks and the Giants and the Bengals were going to struggle, and I would avoid all those running backs, and I think that bared out to be true. Those teams did struggle offensively at times, if not for Russell Wilson's superhero-like football powers. Seattle would have been a terrible offense, but he really saved whatever he could out of them. But they couldn't run. The Giants couldn't run. Joe Mixon was a bust because the Bengals couldn't run. And we'll see. I'll take a closer look at that as we get out of OTAs and headed towards June and July. But in any event, that's the deal. Pressure on Andrew Luck. I think that's how we started this conversation.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I feel. That's why I feel pretty good that the Titans, at least putting the Titans at one, at least as of today, because I just feel like there are just certain aspects of the other three teams that I just feel pretty unsure about.
So let me go back to, since we talked about the draft and those rookies earlier, of those rookie running backs that went in my draft, Saquon's going to be number one everywhere, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be a first-round draft pick. People are going to expect him to produce a lot. And you like Geis second and Freeman third?
I'm not sure after two. Like, I can be talked into a number of things after that.
I would
have
taken Penny over Freeman. I understand the Seattle offensive line struggles, but they are turning it around. They got Dwayne Brown and Ethan Posich and Justin Britt. They have three of the guys that they want moving forward.
So that's funny, because the one thing I was going to say is I don't know if I can be talked into Penny. And we'll see, right? Like, if the offensive line looks like it's holding up. But I do not trust the Seattle offensive line. I just feel like we're at the point where Seattle is taking that collapse. Like, dynasties are not meant to be forever. What the Patriots do is completely unrealistic, and that's not something that anyone's done before, and I don't know if it'll ever be replicated. We're looking at what I think is probably going to be a darker time. It's tough to say that because they've got one of the three best quarterbacks, I would say, in all of football, and typically that's enough to keep you competitive, but I'm somewhat out on Seattle, and a part of that is I didn't like the Penny pick when it happened, and I'm still not necessarily going to be high on it now.
Look, I thought it was a reach in some ways, but Rashad Penny also didn't get enough respect during his last season at San Diego State, and long term, I don't mind that pick. Once the draft is over, you can't get caught up in this guy should have a second round pick, and they drafted him at the end of the first. I think it's an asset that they needed going forward. They obviously don't feel comfortable with Chris Carson on his own, so they gotta they're building it up. They had to tear it down before they built it back up. Earl Thomas still remains a Seahawk, though, right? There's so much talk about him being moved, and he remains a Seahawk.
It'll be interesting to see if Earl moves. I would probably, at the moment, I'd say Earl, not Earl, excuse me, Sony Michel would probably be my third guy, the running backs.
Yeah, I get it. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk NBA playoffs in the third hour. Kev's pumped. Bring Rob Bowen to learn a little bit more about him. I don't know anything about the guy, so it's a get-to-know-Rob segment in the hour number three. Mike and Kevin on FST. We'll be right back.